So what I wanted to start out with this morning is, again, a question, as I often do. And what I would ask you is that, you know, what's the most important thing in your life? You know, and as you think about that, like, what's most important? You know, kind of initially, there might be a particular person that comes to mind. It might be an experience that you've had. It might be a place that really resonates with you. But I think that if we take time and we really think about it, the thing that is really most precious in our lives are our relationships, right? Because the relationships are the things that really connect us as people, right? That, you know, obviously, you know, your immediate family, or, you know, hopefully you have solid relationships with them, right? But those relationships are really valuable. You know, sometimes you develop relationships with people because of circumstance. You know, folks who I know who've been in combat, right? The people that they shared combat with have incredible relationships. You know, people who go on mission trips, who do other important projects together, have really strong relationships. My hope is that your relationship with God is strong as well. Because I think that strong relationships are a key part of a healthy life. But the thing is that if our relationships are so important, I wonder how much time do we really spend kind of caring for our relationships? I mean, how much time do we spend kind of thinking about our relationships and about how the choices I make and how do they affect my relationships? Am I investing in my relationships? So what I wanted to do today is start off a new series that I've called Connection Points. Connection Points. And what I want to do throughout this series is talk a bit about relationships. But I want to do it as we walk through a book of the Old Testament. You know, it's funny, whenever I talk about a book of the Old Testament we walk through, I'm like, oh, this one's my favorite. Because a lot of them are kind of my favorite sort of thing. And often they're the ones that I don't feel like get the kind of love they should sort of thing. And for this series, I want to walk through the book of Ruth. Now, the book of Ruth is kind of interesting because it's actually really short. It's 4 chapters. And it feels like, if you just kind of did a cursory reading of it, it feels like this short story of a little segment of a young woman's life. But what we find is that it's a book that talks about relationships. It talks about our relationships with one another. It shows us a lot about our relationship with ourselves. It explores our relationship with God. And honestly, I think it actually calls us to action as a church to help us understand kind of what are our responsibilities as a church for those who are here together with us and for those who aren't here yet. Now, the thing is that the thing I find interesting about Ruth is this kind of very outsider person. And she just kind of does the next right thing over and over again. And in that, she goes from being this kind of outsider person to somehow, we'll find out how, actually being in the family line of King David. And which is interesting because she wasn't even from the nation of Israel. So that wasn't even really supposed to be possible. But yet one of the most powerful kings in their history is her great-grandson. And what that means is if she's in the family line of David, she's also in the family line of Jesus. Now, what's interesting is that if we go through the book of Ruth, it really talks about 3 people. Now, you can probably guess one of them. It's probably Ruth, right? It's Ruth. But then there's another person we talk about, Naomi, her mother-in-law. And it's a good story, which might be surprising. I don't know. We'll find out. Right? And the other person will be Boaz, who we'll talk about him starting next week. And the thing here is that it just shows us a lot about relationships. Now, in order to understand the story of Ruth, we need to kind of understand the environment that they were living in. Now, the story of Ruth takes place about 1,000 years before Jesus, so about 3,000 years ago. And it was written centuries before even the time of Jesus, so it was recorded even well before the time of Jesus. And if you look at the very first sentence of it, it tells you a lot of information. It says that in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. That's the very first sentence of the book of Ruth. Now, a famine tells us a lot. You know, there's no food. That's an issue. But the fact that it's the when the judges ruled. This is a really interesting time in the history of, we call it Israel now. Back then it was called Judah. It's a really interesting time in the history of Judah, because Judah had these periods where they had strong leadership, and then other times where they had kind of either poor, weak, or virtually no leadership. Now, if you think about the history, right, that we start with Moses, right? Moses was the one leading them through the desert. Moses was a very strong leader. When they finally reach their homeland, right, that the leader becomes Joshua, again, another really strong leader. Now, centuries after Joshua, you know, you get out there to the era of the kings and you reach King David, another really strong leader. But between Joshua and the era of the kings is the period of the judges. And if you read the book of Judges, it describes the era like this. It describes the era as a time where everyone did what was right in their own eyes. In other words, everyone just looked out for themselves. Nobody was really working together. People weren't, in general, caring for each other. There was no real leadership. And, you know, whether it's a country, an organization, a church, if you don't have leadership, things don't generally go very well. And so in this time of kind of chaos and dysfunction, you throw in a famine. And so that's where we meet Naomi. Naomi lives in a city that you may have heard of, the city of Bethlehem. But again, this is more than 1,000 years before the time of Jesus. So Naomi and her husband, along with their two sons, live in the city called Bethlehem, and they're facing a famine. And so to deal with the famine, they make a really drastic choice. They make the choice to not just leave their hometown, but leave the nation of Judah to go to a neighboring country called Moab. Now, we've talked about this before in other series, that in the ancient world, you're kind of your hometown, your home space. That was your security. That was your life. That's where you knew people. And if anyone was going to help you, it would be those people. If you moved away from that area, you were choosing to go out on your own. And that's what Naomi and her husband did. They decided with their two sons to go off on their own and go to this neighboring country called Moab. So they take this risk. They take this long journey. And shortly after they get there, kind of the unimaginable happens. Shortly after they get there, Naomi's husband dies. So now it's her and her two sons living in a foreign country on their own. Now, fortunately, they were sons. So, you know, in this very patriarchal world that they lived in, that there was still possible for them to survive. And it does seem that they set up a life. They live there for a number of years. Her sons grow up. They ultimately each get married. And they do something that's kind of unusual. Is they marry local women, Moabite women. Because in the culture of Judah, you generally did not marry outside of Judah. So they've really kind of settled in. So each of the sons marry a local girl, a Moabite. One of those local girls is Ruth. But then the narrative tells us about 10 years later, both of the sons die. And we know that this was a time of a lot of wars and a lot of challenges. And we don't know how they died. We just know that they've died. And once that happens, the narrative tells us this. This left Naomi alone, without her two sons or her husband. Now, her life is going to be very hard, right? This is a time where life is skewed towards men, right? Most women don't have the skills to support themselves outside the house. Even if they could, there's limits to who's going to give them an opportunity to support themselves. So this is going to be a very challenging time. But one of the things I find kind of interesting is it says that it left Naomi alone. Is Naomi actually alone? No, right? She's got her two daughters, right? Her two daughters-in-law. But I think what the narrative is trying to show us is that this is how Naomi feels. Naomi set out on this journey with a picture of what her life was going to be like. Right, that it was her and her husband. They were going to raise their sons, and they would have, you know, more children. You know, they would then get married. They'd have grandchildren, and they had this whole picture of what their life was going to be like. And now that's gone. And so for Naomi, she now feels like she's alone. And I think that one of the other things it shows us is that, as we'll go through the narrative, we discover that Naomi is very close with her daughters-in-law. But it seems that in this moment, she can't really see that. And I think this is something that we kind of have to be on guard for. Right? When we're going through our lives and we're experiencing difficult times. I know we all experience difficult times. I know some of you right now are dealing with really, really difficult times. And as we experience those difficult times, and then you get into what I call compounding difficulties, like, boom, you get hit by one thing, and you get hit by another, and you get hit by another. And before long, the pain and the difficulty is the only thing you can see. It feels like every good thing in your life is gone because this pain just overwhelms it. And that's a completely reasonable and natural reaction. But I don't think it helps us. That when we're in that pain, if all we see is the pain, it multiplies the pain. I mean, Naomi could have been, you know, another way to look at it, and I'm not saying this would be easy, would be that, wow, life is about to get really hard. At least I'm not alone. The girls are here with me. But she couldn't see that. And I think that, you know, something I try to do, and I want to be really clear, I don't get this right all the time, but when things are kind of spiraling down for me, what I try to do, I'm a very avid journaler, you know, I write in my journal quite a bit, I try to just sit down and say, you know what, and this sounds so hokey, I'm just going to pick three things that I know are good in my life. I'm just going to write them out. I'm going to think about those. It doesn't fix the problems, but at least reminds me that there are still good things. There are still things to hang on to. There are still things that are worthwhile. Now, for Naomi, she's not really there. She's really struggling. And she's trying to figure out what to do. And while she's in this period of kind of just struggling with what to do, she gets some news from back home. It says, then Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had blessed his people in Judah by giving them good crops again. So Naomi and her daughters-in-law got ready to leave Moab and return to her homeland. And so what we see here is that she finds this out. And she says, oh, hey, there's an answer here. I could go back home. I can go back to where I used to be. Now, be clear. Judah is just as patriarchal as Moab. Women without men in their lives are still going to struggle. Right? And so she sees this chance to go back, and she seems to think that this is really going to help fix things. And when your life starts to spiral out, my life starts to spiral out, if I start thinking about, can I just go back to where I used to be? Is that ever really an option? That as we go through our lives and the changes and challenges we face, and as we change, there really is no going back. But I think that Naomi is kind of like, if I could just get back there. Now, the thing is that the joy that she may have had in her life when she lived in Bethlehem probably had less to do with the city of Bethlehem than the fact that she was with her husband and her two sons. And going back to that same location is not going to bring them back. So I'm not saying that heading back to Bethlehem was not a reasonable consideration, but we get the sense that maybe she was expecting a bit too much from it. You know, and I think about, again, our own lives, that, you know, when my life was spiraling out of control, I'm like, you know, it must be New Hampshire. I'm going to go to Florida. That'll fix it. Yeah, right? Yeah. Depending on your political alignment, you may go, really? Really? Right? But the thing is that there's this truism from the 12-step world that I absolutely love. This truism is, wherever I go, there I am. Right? That when I pick up and try to move, I have not left my personality behind. I have not left my addictions behind. I have not left my anger behind. It seems to come with me wherever I go. Right? And that's the challenge that we have, that Naomi was dealing with her struggles and her pain. Going back to Bethlehem wasn't going to fix that. You know, and I think in our own lives, how often when we're dealing with an issue, you're like, you know what? I need to move to a new place. And I should go to a different state like I tried to do. Or I'll get a new job. That'll fix it. You know, or I'll get a pet, you know, or whatever it is. The reality is that the only way to deal with the pains and hurts in our lives is to deal with the pain and hurt in our lives and face it. You know, and again, that's really, really hard. But Naomi's heard this news. She tells the girls to come on, here we go. We're heading back to Bethlehem. And keeping in mind, a group of three women in that landscape on that long journey on foot would have been an incredibly dangerous journey. And as they set out to go home, or what's home for Naomi, Naomi starts to realize that maybe this isn't such a good plan. Because she turns to the girls and says, "Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband." Now, in our modern minds, that sounds like, well, that just feels like self-pity. But that's not what she's doing. Again, your life was very tied to the men in your life. It's the simple fact of the era. And what she's saying is that I don't really have a path to bring someone else into my life to take care of me. But you're young. If you go back to your households, your family will find you husbands, and they'll take care of you. Don't let me weigh you down. Just go back to your families. They'll sort it out. Don't worry about me. Now, of course, they're going to worry about her. And the girls initially really commit to say, no, I'm not going to do that. We're going to stay with you. But Naomi insists. She kind of really keeps pushing on it. And finally, one of the daughter-in-laws kind of gives in. And with much tears and, you know, hugging, finally says, I'll do as you suggest. And she heads home. And I don't think that was an unreasonable choice, not factoring in all of the reality. That was not an unreasonable thing to do. But Ruth refuses to do that. Ruth says that, no, this is a relationship that is important, that we've built over years, and we're in this together. And so whatever the challenges are, we're going to face these together. Ruth says, don't urge me to leave you or turn my back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. See, Ruth recognizes that there is more going on here. You know, you're right. Heading back to the past isn't going to suddenly fix things. But that doesn't mean that there's still not hope for us. It doesn't mean there's not things we can still do. It doesn't mean that there is no path to happiness or purpose or way forward. You know what? We don't know what it is. But what Ruth is saying is that what I do know is that we're family now. Right? That when and culturally that was accurate, right? When a woman married a man, she married into his family. She became part of his family. And Ruth is basically saying, I made that commitment that you're my family now. I'm not going to abandon you. And so basically she says is that what she's saying is that, and this is something I think that we need to hold on to. What she's saying to Naomi, you're only alone if you choose to be alone. You have a relationship in your life that you can lean on. You have someone in your life who understands your pain, right? Because this was a huge loss, excuse me, loss for Ruth as well. And what she's saying is that, yes, you can go off and try to just carry all that weight by yourself, but that's going to crush you. Let's carry that weight together. Let's figure it out together. And again, I think that in our own lives, when we're experiencing loss, when we're experiencing hurt, when we've got that second, third, fourth, fifth piece of bad news in a row, we can be very tempted to be as Naomi was. You know what? I just want to give up, curl up in a ball, and I'm just not going to, I can't deal with it anymore. And what Ruth is saying is don't do that, that it is worth it to connect with someone else and try to work that out. And that's the thing that I want us to see here is that our relationships, and I mean real relationships, are so important for our lives. I mean, of course we should have healthy relationships with our spouse and with our children. But we need strong relationships beyond that, right? Because some of us lose the people we love. We lose members of our family, and we need people we can lean on to help us with that. Some of us struggle with our family members. And we struggle to get along, or we have just painful moments or painful times. And we need people in our lives that we can actually talk to about it. And you can't wait until it happens to build that relationship. And the key is that when you build a relationship, it is a two-way street. You know, we're not running around going, hey, when my life collapses, I'm leaning on you. Okay, but when your life collapses, you can lean on me. That's what we're called to do in our lives. I mean, honestly, having nothing to do with Christianity, you know, being in good relationships is just part of being a healthy human being and getting through our lives. But what's interesting is that if you are a Christian, if you are someone who put your faith in Jesus, that's not really optional. That we are commanded, if you say that I am going to follow life the way Jesus has guided me to, and I'm going to understand it as it's described in the New Testament, we are called to be a people of relationships, of being there for one another, of carrying the load for one another. The Apostle Paul puts it like this. He says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law of Christ. Now, what is he talking about the law of Christ? I mean, when I read the New Testament, I read that Jesus freed us from the law. But what he freed us from was the hundreds of laws of the Old Testament. And he says, you know what? All that stuff in the Old Testament, all those laws that you read about, if you will remember this one thing, you'll encapsulate all of those, which is love one another as I have loved you, of being there for one another, of carrying the load in life of one another. That as Christians, as Jesus followers, we are commanded to take that seriously, to not live in superficial relationships, right? To not be a church of, hey, everything's fine. Hey, how you doing today? Fine. How you doing today? Fine. I mean, I've been in churches where that's the answer from everyone. When I know they're not fine. Right? The church is supposed to be a place where you don't have to be fine. Because you know what? None of us are really fine. We have good days. We have hard days. We lose people we love. We battle illnesses. People we care about are sick. None of us are quite fine. You know, I'm not saying that we walk around, you know, just kind of blubbering and, you know, completely unable to hold ourselves together all the time. But we should be able to talk about what we're dealing with. And this should be a place where that's okay. Right? And I know that many of you have been together for many years. And you've built those relationships. But we are called to grow that idea. To be a place so that those who are hurting and those who are suffering know that this is a safe place to come to. Where they will find relationships, find kind of meaningful paths. That is the call and purpose of the church. Yes, we are supposed to teach people about Jesus Christ and life in Jesus Christ, but we are also to be a place where relationships are real and people are not alone. That is our fundamental call. That is the idea of carrying one another's burdens. So now for Naomi and Ruth. Ruth makes this commitment to Naomi. And they continue their journey. And they finally reach the town of Bethlehem. Now, I know that many of you folks, you know, have lived in small towns. I mean, Pentecost's kind of a small town. And so if you lived in a small town, like I grew up in a town, you know, way south here in southern New Jersey. And whenever you came back to town, like, people would tell me that they already knew I was here. Because in a small town, as soon as you get there, everybody just starts talking about it. Right? And that's what happened in Bethlehem, right? Is that Naomi came back, and instantly the entire town of Bethlehem knew that she was back. And so as she's walking along, basically crowds of people run up to her and like, hey, can this be Naomi? Remember that Naomi left decades earlier. And so they run up to her and say, can this be Naomi? And Naomi's response tells us where she still is in all this. She says, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. Now, to understand what she's saying there is that you have to kind of understand some of the Hebrew words. The word Naomi means pleasant. So she's like, don't call me pleasant. Mara means bitter. So she's saying, don't come up to me and say, hi, pleasant, how are you? I'm not pleasant anymore. I'm angry. My life is bitter. And what we find is that as she says that, and she continues, she points to where she feels the source of her pain is coming from. She says, I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? Why call me pleasant? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. In other words, you know what? I did what I was supposed to do. I upheld my responsibilities. I did all the things that I was supposed to do. And this is what my life has turned out like. God must have done this to me. God must be punishing me. You know, and I grew up in a version of church that taught that. And that is an absolute lie. That when you're dealing with difficulty, when you're dealing with pain, it's not that God is punishing you. It's that life is hard. That we live in a broken world. We live in a world that is not what God intended. And Jesus promises one day to correct that and fix it in the future. But he tells us what things will be like until he comes back to do that. This is quoting Jesus. So as he's kind of with his disciples, he's telling them a lot about what's going to happen. And then he says this. I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. But in this world you will have trouble. But take heart. I've overcome the world. You know, and when Bonnie and I are kind of dealing with some challenges, I always quote that verse and say, good news. Jesus said it would be bad. Right? But that's kind of what he's saying, right? Is that expect it, that life will be hard. But here's what we don't want to lose. We have to remember what Paul said. So carry each other's burdens. That this idea that life is going to be hard is not to be this death and doom sentence. It's saying that this is the journey. Be prepared for it. You know, put your faith in Jesus. Find peace in Jesus. Lean on God. But also, do not try to go it alone. Do not try to walk through life alone. And this, again, is why strong relationships are so important. You know, and as we kind of talk about, you know, kind of the year ahead that's coming up and the years ahead coming up, and we kind of orient ourselves around our plans and how we continue to grow and how we kind of continue to connect more broadly, that a central part of the things that we do have to be around relationship building, of being a place where people find hope and they find relationships. And yes, they find life in Christ, but you know, also they find life in the support of one another, recognizing that in a burden-filled world, a world where things don't feel like they work out very fair, a world where we feel lots of pain, that we are meant to carry that load with one another, not try to carry it alone. So now what about Ruth and Naomi? They've made it to Bethlehem. So remember that for Naomi, this is a homecoming. Right? For Naomi, she was in Moab, a foreign land, makes this long journey to her homeland. But what about Ruth? Ruth was in her homeland and has made this long journey to be where? A foreign land. So this is a very hard journey for her. And what's interesting is that why were they leaving Moab? Because they were facing, you know, abject poverty, right? Absolute poverty in Moab. Well, when they get to Bethlehem, turns out, what are they facing? Absolute, abject poverty. So what are they going to do? We'll find out next week what they will do.